Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When real estate mogul Alan Waters is found shot to death in his own mansion, it's easy to calculate the motive.
I think when Alan was killed, his estate was estimated in the range of $6 to $7 million.
With so many millions, someone stood to make a killing.
The police were really looking for suspects. It was kind of a wide open case.
But who is the killer? Is it a business associate staking his claim to the company fortune? The gold-digging ex-wife, hot for her husband's millions. Or maybe her jealous lover, looking for payback.
It was truly something that was a whodunit.
But if this dead man can tell no tales, maybe someone who loves him will. How well do you know your neighbors? What lies behind the white picket fences? In Baton Rouge, Louisiana, there's an old adage that floats around the city, let the good times roll. When the hometown favorite LSU Tigers gear up for game day, the good times are easy to come by. And no matter what the outcome on the gridiron, the festivities off the field always score big with this Cajun crowd.
There's usually 200,000 people in the area. They cook, they do couscous delays. It's a pig on a Cajun microwave, which is a big pit with a whole bunch of fire. And they party, they drink, they have a good time.
But there's one man in Baton Rouge who doesn't have time to party. Alan Waters. An engineer turned real estate mogul from New England, Alan is a self-made millionaire. But his friend Jim Revel knows Alan wasn't born with a silver spoon. He's just a guy who enjoys the simple things in life.
The reflection on Alan's childhood that he passed on to me was how hard he worked in school to achieve his success. He was definitely not a flashy person. I think Alan liked to be in the background.
Even without a taste for flair, this father's eyes always sparkle when he's around his two kids. But for all his success in business and fatherhood, Alan hasn't been so lucky with love. He recently split up with his wife, Jan, after 17 years together. Having been granted temporary custody in his divorce, Alan's life revolves around his kin.
He always talked about his children. Alan thought the world of both of them, but he really wanted to see them brought up and have a lot of the things that perhaps he didn't have.
Maybe that's why, after his children were born, Alan decided to build a mega mansion in the upscale White Oak Landing neighborhood. But with summer approaching, Alan makes plans to spend some time at a more humble abode, his vacation home up north. After all, even the world's best dad needs a break from it all once in a while. And his ex-wife Jan is the perfect babysitter. Even though Jan uprooted to Vegas after the separation, she's more than willing to lend Alan a helping hand with his getaway.
Regrettably, when Jan left the state, it probably caused some problems. But I don't think that Alan had any real animus against Jan.
So Jan heads to Alan's home to pick up the kids for a mini summer vacation with Mom. And with an empty nest for the first time in what seems like ages, Alan packs his bags for his big summer adventure of 2004, unaware that his trip of a lifetime is about to end. Late in the afternoon of Saturday, May 22nd, veteran officer David Arcediano is on routine patrol in Baton Rouge. Even with two decades of experience, this officer is shocked to learn from dispatch that a call has come in about a suspicious death in the posh White Oak Landing neighborhood.
Most we ever go in there on is maybe house alarms or occasional somebody ran off the road, hit a garbage can, something like that.
Once David arrives at the upscale estate, he smells something foul. But it isn't a tipped trash can. He's greeted at the front door by a man named Warner Avery, who's pretty shaken up. He's just found his good friend Alan Waters dead on his bedroom floor.
Wake up.
Warner says he and Alan were scheduled to have dinner that night, and the always punctual Alan was MIA.
He went over there and started knocking on the doors. He didn't answer. He saw his car was there. I believe he told me his newspaper was still outside, which hadn't been picked up, and told me he found an unlocked door and went in.
Which is strange, because Warner says Alan would always lock his door, even if he was just getting the mail. Officer Arcediano tells Warner to wait outside until he can check out the body. And when the investigator lays eyes on it, the surreal sight shocks him. Alan is in the buff.
It appeared that he was looking at a TV, and he had a towel or something to that sort draped over him. And it appeared that he didn't have on any clothes underneath it.
There are only a few drops of blood around Alan's naked body. But once Officer Arcediano takes a closer look, he sees something alarming.
He had a hole in his chest, and it appeared to be a bullet hole. I was immediately thinking that somebody murdered him.
And the officer makes another observation that may explain why someone offed Alan.
The bathroom drawers were pulled out. The closet's been gone through. The dresser drawers were pulled out. Several things were thrown on the floor, which at that point I was kind of thinking, okay, was this a robbery gone bad?
But that's just a theory for the moment. And this case is too big for Officer Arcediano to handle as a one-man band. So he calls for backup. And one of the sheriff's finest answers the call. With 20 years' experience under his belt, Sergeant Kevin Wagasback is the best man for the job. And when you call this gumshoe, you needn't worry how to pronounce his name.
They all call me Wag, which is short for my last name.
So Detective Wag hightails it to the crime scene, knowing that in a high-profile case like this, time is of the essence. When he arrives at the mansion, his detective skills are immediately put to good use.
There were no signs of forced entry to the house that lets us know that either somebody entered the house with a key or that Alan Waters admitted the suspect into the house.
And that's not the only thing that catches the detective's eye.
We found a camera case on the sidewalk, and then further into the grass, there was a camera and a watch found. This led us to believe that this was the path the suspect had used to leave the residence.
The detective's best hope is that the perp dropped the murder weapon, too, while committing the heist. But a search of the house, both inside and out, doesn't reveal any smoking guns, foreign fingerprints, or hard evidence. So for now, Detective Wagasback's attention is all on the body in the bedroom. And what seems to have everyone scratching their heads is why Alan is in his birthday suit.
We were looking at the possibility that Mr. Waters was naked and a home invasion had occurred, as perhaps he had just gotten out of the shower.
But did a stranger do the dirty deed just as Alan was getting cleaned up, hoping to clean out the millionaire's valuables? Or was there something more personal in play?
There were very specific areas that were targeted in the home. His bathroom, his master closet, and his office downstairs.
Detectives know that when only select areas are ransacked, it usually means one of two things.
It was either somebody that knew that something was in the house and had a specific target, or there was still the possibility that they had been interrupted and that had been the first place they had gone and they didn't get to finish the rest of the house.
To help get some answers, detectives send Alan's body to the coroner. And in the meantime, investigators alert Alan's ex-wife of the tragedy. And jet-lagged Jan can't believe her ears. Even though she's just one day into her Vegas vacation with the kids, Jan's ready to aid police.
She had actually, at our request, flown back to Baton Rouge from Las Vegas. We had requested her help in identifying anything that may be missing from the house. And we felt that Jan could help us, and she was actually very cooperative with us.
When news of Alan's death hits the community, no one is more stunned than his good friend, Jim Revel.
That type of thing doesn't happen, and you don't expect it to happen in a community like Baton Rouge. There was nothing about Alan Waters that I ever observed in my 18 years with him that would have anyone want to shoot him.
But police think Warner Avery, the man who found Alan dead, might know the answer. After all, it wouldn't be the first time a 911 caller was also the killer.
One of our first steps was to interview the person that found Mr. Waters and learn the reason why he was at the home and what his relationship was to Mr. Waters.
And when police find out that Warner isn't just a friend, but also a business associate, detectives have to wonder. Maybe his 911 call was simply a ploy to cover up a villainous scheme. After all, it would have been easy for Warner to do the deed, since police learn he has a key to Alan's house. But perhaps someone else also had their eyes on the mogul's millions.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Only hours after the body of Alan Waters is discovered, fear grips the wealthy Baton Rouge community of White Oak Landing, as residents invest in the best security money can buy. Just ask veteran reporter Jim Shannon.
After the initial murder happened, people were out buying guns, locking their doors, buying security systems. Yes, they were very protective.
Luckily for police, they already have a suspect in the case, Allen's close friend and business associate, Warner Avery.
We looked at the possibility that Mr. Avery may have caused Mr. Waters' death either through some kind of business motivation or through some kind of conflict within their personal relationship.
Good thing Baton Rouge's medical examiner has found some answers.
Allen Waters had been killed by a single gunshot to the right side of his torso. It was .38 caliber. It had gone through his side and hit his lung and his heart, and death was instantaneous.
And that's not the only news the ME has to offer police.
The coroner's office estimated that he had been killed between midnight and 2 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, May 22nd.
With that key information in his pocket, Detective Wagasback is ready to talk to the man at the top of his list, Warner Avery. Warner called 911 several hours after Allen died, but where was he when his friend breathed his last? To find out, police want to have a chat with Allen's good friend.
Mr. Avery was very concerned when we first encountered him. Warner Avery seemed to be a very nice guy. He obviously cared very much about Mr. Waters.
But appearances can be misleading. So detectives ask Allen's business associate to come to the station for an interview.
I came in and he was upstairs.
Under some intense questioning, Warner reiterates that when he arrived at Allen's house, he found the door unlocked. But what he says next arouses suspicions even more.
He actually had a key to Mr. Waters' residence. He was one of the few people that Mr. Waters trusted where he would give him a key to the residence.
Maybe Allen's business associate let himself in and surprised Allen when he was most vulnerable. But if Warner did kill Allen, what was his motive?
We did look at the possibility that there was some kind of conflict between Mr. Waters and Mr. Avery. He was very successful in the real estate business, not to the extent that Mr. Waters was.
Perhaps over the years, jealousy got the best of Warner, and he wanted to even up the score. And maybe, just maybe, Warner stood to inherit some riches with Allen out of the way. To find out, detectives contact Allen's lawyer to see if Warner stood to inherit anything from Allen's death. And the answer is somewhat of a letdown.
Mr. Avery was not named as receiving anything in Mr. Waters' will.
But there's something about Warner's demeanor during questioning that keeps him very much in play as a potential suspect.
Mr. Avery came across to us as very deceptive, as if he were hiding something.
With more questions than answers, detectives ask Warner his whereabouts during the early morning hours of Friday night, the evening Allen was killed. And surprisingly, Warner has a pretty strong alibi.
We were able to determine where he was at the time of the homicide, which was at home with his wife.
Seems Warner never left the bed that night, not even for a glass of warm milk. But Detective Wagasback refuses to hang his head.
When Mr. Avery was taken off the suspect list, we were not deflated. It happens. We've worked quite a number of homicides. You just pick up and go to the next possible avenue.
And at the moment, it looks like all roads lead to Allen's ex-wife, Jan Waters.
After the person that finds the body, obvious suspects are anybody that they have a personal relationship with. Spouses, ex-spouses, anyone there. And in this case, he did have an ex-wife.
And when investigators learn from Warner that Allen's ex was recently in Baton Rouge to pick up their two kids for a summer getaway, police can't help but think that maybe Jan was somehow involved in Allen's murder. When Detective Wagasback sits her down in the hot seat at the station, it does seem she may be in a hot spot.
Jan was distraught about Allen, but she did raise some red flags with us because she was very concerned about locating $20,000 in cash that Allen was supposed to have kept in the house, hidden in some shoeboxes.
Was this cash-concerned mom the cause of Allen's demise? Did she have an axe to grind that led her to pick up a murder weapon? Maybe Alan's death was her revenge for past grudges.
Spouses kill for money because they are disgruntled. They feel like they were taken advantage of. Things didn't work out for them, and they have this sense of entitlement where they think, I deserve this.
With 20 large lingering in Alan's house, anyone might want to kill him for a quick payday. And it seems nobody wanted the money more than Alan's ex-wife. But was the millionaire's death really over his divorce? Or are police walking down the wrong aisle altogether? It's been only a day since Alan Waters was found slain inside his Tudor-style mansion. And television reporter Jim Shannon knows all of Baton Rouge is as hungry for information as they are for an extra helping at the corner carryout.
The local restaurants have the same people in there every day, and we tip a lot. So you throw a couple dollars down, and you get a big, maybe extra little piece of ham on your sandwich.
But Baton Rouge investigators are only hungry to find the person who killed real estate tycoon Alan Waters.
There are very few cases where you just don't know who it is, and it could be anybody. This was one of those cases where we had a suspect list, but it could be anybody.
But right now, police have somebody they want to look at. Alan's ex-wife, Jan Waters. So Detective Wagisback calls for some assistance from the prosecutor's office. With 30-plus years' experience, investigator Chuck Smith knows just about every law written. But these justice junkies think he's the perfect man for the job. This seasoned investigator knows that where there's smoke, there's often fire. And right now, Alan's ex-wife is a scorching suspect.
A spouse or an ex-spouse probably has more motive than anybody, whether it be financial or whether it be hatred or whatever it is.
If Jan did do in Alan, police need to figure out why. So they decide to ask Alan's ex a few hard-nosed questions. Fresh off the red eye from Las Vegas, Jan tells detectives she and Alan weren't bitter after their divorce.
This was a very amicable divorce. The property settlement seemed to go well. Jan left Baton Rouge, would come back on relatively frequent trips to visit the kids, and was allowed to stay in the house with Alan and the kids.
In fact, Jan says she stayed with Alan for the entire week before her planned trip to Vegas with the kids. She said it was business as usual during her stay at Alan's.
They had had some kind of dispute about some money that he was going to give her for the children prior to her leaving for Las Vegas. But she said it was not any kind of big confrontation. It was something that they argued about frequently.
Jan tells police she left the home Friday afternoon, well before police believe Alan was shot.
Her flight to Las Vegas was leaving following morning from the New Orleans airport, and they checked into the hotel in order to be closer to it so they would have more time to get ready in the morning.
If what Jan says is true, it means she couldn't possibly be the killer, since Alan was murdered later that Friday night.
Alan was alive and well when Jan left, according to her.
But as Jan rambles on, detectives sense there may be more to her than meets the eye. She seems overly concerned about money Alan had secretly stowed away in the house.
Mr. Waters was very afraid that the real estate market would crash and that he would lose a lot of his assets. So he was known to keep over $20,000 in cash in the residence in case he needed it.
Jan tells police that he hid the small fortune in shoeboxes inside his closet. The same closet that police think Alan's killer ransacked.
There were very few people that knew this. Very few. So for somebody to go into a house and actually search those shoeboxes, it had to be somebody that knew what was in there.
Police search Alan's home once again, but there are no signs of the cash, which means Alan's killer must have stolen the money. If Jan is behind the crime, why did she tell police about the secret treasure? And why was she so worried about it? Detective Wagasback desperately wants to find out.
Normally, the person would be concerned about what happened to their ex-spouse, what's going on with the homicide, but she was just on a mission to find that money, and that definitely stood out with us.
Maybe Jan was looking to collect her largest alimony check to date.
From my standpoint, if someone tells me that this person is known to keep large amounts of money hidden in a house, that would tell me that whoever committed that homicide knew where that was and went directly to it and got it.
This cunning cop knows people most often kill over love and money. Two motives that fit Jan better than her favorite pair of heels.
There were still some policies from when they had been married that he had never changed, and she was still the beneficiary of those policies.
So to finally find out if Jan had anything to do with this crime, detectives head east to New Orleans to check the hotel where she and the kids supposedly stayed. When they arrive, they soon realize there's no vacancy in Jan's alibi.
Jan Waters did actually register at the hotel and check in there on the Friday night. Paid with her American Express credit card, and they had a record of her being on the premises.
Looks like Jan is true to her word. So for now, the ex-wife is off the hot seat.
She was a suspect to the extent that all spouses or ex-spouses are, but beyond the normal suspicion, that was pretty much it. Jan was really not a strong suspect.
With their two top suspects, Warner and Jan, seemingly off the hook, police start to think that maybe Alan's death was indeed the result of a home invasion gone completely haywire.
I think if you were looking at it from a standpoint of a random robbery, if someone were to look at the house, they would look at that house and say, those people obviously have some money.
But if someone did break into Alan's home to steal his treasures, who was it? After a quick neighborhood canvas, detectives realize White Oak Landing isn't without its blemishes. There was another home invasion nearby, just a year before Alan was murdered.
The other home invasion that occurred in White Oak Landing was approximately a mile from Mr. Waters' residence.
Although the previous case was solved fairly quickly, it's fair to think maybe there was a copycat in the area stalking Alan's residence. Will detectives find their phantom menace in this low-rent area of Baton Rouge? Or are they cruising the wrong side of town? Only 3 days have passed since Alan Waters was found murdered inside his Baton Rouge estate. And already, the case is staler than a day-old po' boy. Newsman Jim Shannon can't help but notice that people around the Rouge don't have much of an appetite these days.
People were wondering, how could this have happened? Why did this happen? You know, this guy with his kids, not in our neighborhood. This doesn't happen here. Well, it did.
Up until now, investigators have focused on Alan's circle of friends in their search for suspects. But when they drive down the street from Alan's place, they're looking at folks in a different tax bracket.
I myself have worked a couple of homicides in that very apartment complex. So when you start looking at who could have committed a crime in this affluent neighborhood, one of the places you look is that apartment complex.
Investigators do some door-to-doors, hoping to lay some traps. If a tenant decides to boast about their boost, police think it may lead them straight to Alan's killer. So Detective Wagasback leaves his calling card with the property manager of the apartment complex.
We made sure we touched base with them, and if they heard anything that pertained to this homicide whatsoever, to let us know.
Without any obvious leads popping up, police decide it's time to take a break from the case. But they aren't away from the action. With their investigation in the red zone, Detective Wagasback partakes in a pastime that dates back to his college days at LSU.
Tailgating at LSU is fantastic. We try to go as much as possible.
But he knows the real action isn't on the field. It's in the parking lots, where the fun reaches a whole new level.
Opposing teams love to come to LSU. Their fans walk around, and after being taunted for a brief period of time, they welcome them in, sit down, eat some food. They really make you feel at home.
But the trick to any good tailgate starts with setting your alarm clock.
We try to get there as early as possible. We have a large number of friends that tailgate in various areas, so we try to go visit each one of them.
But when the game clock strikes zero and detectives are back to work, they have to consider the possibility they're overlooking something in the investigation. Nothing new is panning out in the Section 8 neighborhood, so perhaps Alan wasn't a victim of a home invasion. Figuring out a motive in Alan's death is downright tricky.
We either have cases that are in relation to the drug trade, or we have homicides that are domestically related where a motive is pretty obvious. This case didn't fit either one of those normal characteristics. It was truly a whodunit.
With no one to pin the murder on, police find themselves grasping at straws. So they decide to talk to Alan's friends once more. And when they do, police learn that Alan's ex-wife Jan is living with a new man in Las Vegas, Colton Jennings. But is Colton just a wild card in an investigation that's on the verge of cashing out? Or are police about to get a royal flush in their case?
They'd been together for about 8 months at this point. And of course, we had to look at, did Mr. Jennings know about this? Was he involved?
After a background check into Colton's life, looks like Jan only has a sparkle in her eye for one kind of man.
Mr. Jennings was also involved in the real estate market. He did not do quite as well as Mr. Waters, but he was fairly comfortable.
But maybe Colton wasn't comfortable with his girl spending a week at her ex-husband's house.
Boyfriends are good suspects. Frequently, they can be jealous. Frequently, they can be trying to do something that in their mind benefits their new girlfriend. And there could have been issues that were coming up where he decided, if I do this, it will make life easier, it'll benefit us.
Did an enraged Colton travel to Baton Rouge to settle the score? Detectives asked the Las Vegas Police Department to talk to Colton on their behalf, hoping that Jan's new man might know something. When police come knocking on Colton's door, he lets them in, but isn't exactly chummy towards investigators.
Mr. Jennings seemed to be cooperating, but there was something off about it to where the investigators talking with him felt that he was being deceptive.
But what is Colton hiding? Police ask if they can search his home, and Colton readily obliges. But his cooperation backfires. Looks like Colton is ready to get out of Dodge because police find some telling printouts buried in his house.
When we found the documentation at the house in Las Vegas describing how to start a new life in another country with another identity, a big red flag goes up.
Detective Wagasback thinks he may finally have found the man responsible for Alan's murder.
I don't believe an innocent person would have information about how to move to another country under another identity. Obviously, if you're looking at getting out of the United States and settling somewhere else where they can't find you, you're leaving for a reason.
And the research is only half the story. There's something else inside Colton's home that has investigators scratching their heads. An empty gun case.
Obviously, our first question is, where's the weapon? And how can we find out where this weapon was, what kind of weapon it was, and if it's involved in the case?
Colton says he doesn't know the answers.
It is suspicious that a person would not know what kind of weapon was in their house.
Especially when police can tell the case is designed for a pistol. But as the Q&A goes into overtime, Colton offers police a bit of information that steers them back to one of their original suspects. He says the gun belonged to Jan, and she was the one researching ways to change an identity.
We felt here's another piece of circumstantial evidence that lends more weight to Jan being a suspect and being responsible for this homicide, and it was a very incriminating piece of evidence.
But the he said, she said is nothing new to these cops. So for the time being, they keep plugging away at Colton.
Our belief was that he had information about the homicide and he was not sharing all that information with law enforcement.
So to see what Colton was up to that day, police questioned some of his neighbors. And wouldn't you know, it looks like Colton never left his Las Vegas home on the night Allen was murdered.
Investigators in Las Vegas interviewed people in the neighborhood that could verify that Mr. Jennings was at his residence that weekend.
For now, it looks like Colton is off the hot seat. But he isn't entirely cleared from wrongdoing. There's still a chance he's involved in the crime, or at the very least, knew about it. Until they can prove it, police want to take a closer look at Allen's ex-wife, Jan Waters.
When he informed the authorities that the weapon and the material was found in the house belonged to Jan Waters, it helped to strengthen her as our main suspect.
Police have undeniable proof that she was in a New Orleans hotel at the time of the crime. So if Jan did do in her ex, detectives still have two very basic questions. How and why? After 2 weeks of grueling twists and turns in the investigation of Allen Waters' death, the East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office thinks Allen's ex-wife, Jan Waters, is behind this murder mystery. There's just one problem: proving she did it.
The major hurdle was her alibi. We had every confidence that if Jan killed Allen, we would be able to prove it. We set about with a game plan of how can we destroy her alibi.
But so far, it seems Jan's story is as solid as cement.
By all accounts, Jan was in New Orleans, so she couldn't have committed the murder during that period of time.
But the Big Easy is just an easy hour's drive from her ex-husband's house in Baton Rouge. So, is it possible Jan did the drive to do the deed? Who would know better than the two people sharing her New Orleans hotel room? Her 10-year-old son and 12-year-old daughter.
The sheriff's department felt like it was important to interview the two children to see if there was anything that the kids could reveal, but Jan refused to allow that interview to take place.
And that makes investigators even more suspicious of Jan. Is she simply protecting her kids from a grilling? Or does she want to keep them mum because they know the truth?
Jan not letting us talk to the children was very frustrating. There were a number of possible leads and scenarios that might come out of talking to the children, but Jan was refusing to let us do so.
With Jan playing hardball, police decide to step up their game as well. And they have a key player on deck. East Baton Rouge Assistant District Attorney Jean Rougeau. This hard-hitting prosecutor is ready to take a swing at the investigation.
I was very excited because it's a case that is well known, and I had followed it from the beginning. To have the opportunity to work on it personally, I was excited.
When Jean sinks her teeth into the case, she agrees with the police department. Something is fishy about Jan Waters, and maybe her children will help them net their shark. So police get a warrant to talk to Jan's son and daughter alone. And when the youngins come into the station, Detective Wagisback asks Jan's daughter to tell him what really happened that fateful night. She quickly takes the bait.
She thought about it for about 3 seconds, and then you could see a sigh and her shoulders dropped, and everything just came out.
The daughter tells police that after her mom checked them into a New Orleans hotel around 8 o'clock, she took them on a wild goose chase.
She stated that they went out to eat, and then Jan became lost. They drove around while Jan was apparently trying to find the hotel.
But while mom said they were in New Orleans, her daughter knew better.
The daughter was very intelligent and able to tell immediately that she was in Baton Rouge, even though Jan told her that they were still in New Orleans.
More telling still, the daughter also remembers checking into a hotel in Baton Rouge after the wild ride.
I think that Jan was hoping that with the children falling asleep and it being so late, they either wouldn't notice or just wouldn't pay too much mind to the fact that they were at a different hotel.
But when confronted with her daughter's story, Jan insists she never left New Orleans after checking in. To see who's telling the truth, police take a look at the hotel's surveillance tapes. And what they find may be a blockbuster.
We have her on video surveillance checking in, arriving at the hotel, and then within a few minutes, leaving the hotel with the children.
And the video shows that Jan didn't return to the New Orleans hotel until 4 in the morning. Was she in Baton Rouge for the 8 hours in between, as her daughter says? Police know just how to find out.
We had subpoenaed Jan's cell phone records, including the cell tower information, which would show the location where her cell phone was while it was being used. And it showed that when Jan left New Orleans the night of the murder, she had actually driven back into Baton Rouge.
Finally, after weeks, police are able to prove that Jan is lying about her whereabouts on the night her ex-husband was killed. But if she was plenty close enough to do the damage, what was her motive? Investigators delve a little deeper to see if they can find some trouble in paradise, and they quickly discover a snake in the grass.
There had been a psychological examination of the family to determine who was best capable of caring for the children, and the psychologist recommended that Alan maintain custody.
And that meant Jan wouldn't receive child support.
In our opinion, Jan's worry was that she would lose the money that came with having the children in her custody.
But with Alan 6 feet under, she'd come out a step ahead, inheriting his entire estate since their kids were only minors.
I think the plan was for Jan to kill Alan, get sole custody of the kids, and be able to live off of that estate.
After an exhausting investigation, police finally have enough evidence to charge Jan Waters with the murder of her ex-husband. But even when she's fresh out of ACEs, she refuses to confess. So investigators play their trump card. They threaten to call her children to testify. And Jan finally folds.
I think maybe for one of the only times in her life, she actually did consider her children, their needs ahead of hers, and was willing to accept the plea agreement.
In December of 2010, Jan Waters is sentenced to 20 years in prison for the murder of Alan Waters. When word of the conviction catches up to Alan's friend, Jim Revel, he's relieved that justice has finally been served.
She didn't get away with it. In the end, the police, the lead investigators, and the district attorneys, they pursued this case as they should have. And I think that's what gives us all a sense of safety in our communities.
As part of her reduced sentence, Jan agrees to tell prosecutors exactly what happened the night Alan was murdered. And based on her confession, this is how the nightmare unfolded.
Her story was that she did return to Baton Rouge the night of the murder, but that she and Alan were working on reconciling.
Jan left the kids at a hotel and went to the house, maybe hoping to surprise her ex. Since her idea of a reconciliation has a sexy twist.
She said Alan was naked because they had just had sex.
But then she says they got into an argument over Jan's Las Vegas lover, Colton Jennings.
And Alan lost his temper, arguing with her and yelling at her.
But is Jan just trying to make it sound like what she did next was in self-defense? Maybe to reduce her sentence? Jan tells police that Alan had a gun in his bedroom, and she decided to use it to protect herself.
She knew the gun was right there in the nightstand and pulled it out and shot him.
But Detective Wagisback thinks Jan's story is nothing but smoke and mirrors.
Jan's story makes no sense to me whatsoever, because if they were in the process of reconciling, there's no reason for her to go to New Orleans and then sneak back to Baton Rouge. It just doesn't make sense.
Seems Jan shooting Alan was no crime of passion. It was all about the money.
This was a plan, well executed, fairly well thought out crime that she committed. She took a lot of steps, did her best to establish an alibi. She came up with a plan and she executed it.
And police believe that after Jan committed the ultimate sin, she staged the scene.
I think after she killed him, she tossed the place to make it look like there was a robbery. She took the cash that she knew was there. She drove back to the hotel in Baton Rouge, picked up the kids, drove back to New Orleans as if nothing had happened and went to sleep.
She discarded the murder weapon at an unknown location somewhere in between. While police may never know exactly what happened that night or which gun Jan used to commit the crime, one thing is for sure. Baton Rouge is a safer place with Jan behind bars.
Every case that you solve, as corny as it sounds, makes the world just a little bit better. You're able to go to a family member and say, I'm sorry that this happened to your loved one, but it will never happen to anybody else.
And although Jim Revel is thankful police finally caught his friend's killer, he knows it will never bring Alan back.
I miss Alan in all kinds of ways. I want Jan to recognize the harm that she did to his children and her children. And I think she cut her life short that provided an awful lot of good things to people.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.